most involved in creating partnerships and collaborations. Often that somehow becomes transparent to funders, and as if magically collaborations occur. So the Health Federation is, as Ellen said, is a local nonprofit public health organization. We're a consortium of federally qualified health centers in Philadelphia. My presentation is actually quite different from the others in that it's really about practice on the ground and system change in that respect. I have nothing to disclose, so moving right along. Our consortium of health centers has 10 members, including the Philadelphia Department of Public Health, and together they comprise 38 sites of primary care in the Philadelphia region, serving more than 260,000 individuals annually. So it's a big safety net system, urban system, and the role of the Health Federation is to support their mission in improving access to care and expanding the scope and effectiveness and efficiency of that care for the underserved. To accomplish that, we serve as the kind of coordinating program development advocacy agent on behalf of our members and the communities that they serve. The focus of this member of this paper will be to describe a model of behavioral health integration in primary care. But more importantly, for the purpose of this panel, I'll describe the model as by way of context, but really the focus is on the history and the process of creating that change and the lessons that we've learned along the way. The story started about 5 years ago. I was approached by our local behavioral health department and the local county Medicaid managed care plan for behavioral health for Philadelphia County. And they approached me with the question of whether federally qualified health centers might be an appropriate venue for expanding access to behavioral health services in Philadelphia County. Because many of the patients that we see in health centers do in fact exhibit behavioral health challenges, the answer was of course yes, but not that simple. The several health centers had been providing behavioral health services in a kind of traditional, co-located, traditional therapy model. And for a variety of reasons, which will become clear, they were not satisfied with the effectiveness of their programs. And so I convened a conversation between the payer, the public system, and these private sector providers. And as a result, CBH, the Behavioral Health Plan, began to understand that by imposing on providers in primary care settings the same requirements that they impose, the same expectations that they have of mental health centers, they were actually impeding the primary care providers' ability to deliver behavioral health services. So the what the providers were experiencing was that they were plagued with burdensome paperwork, low reimbursement, high no-show rates, little collaboration with primary care, a patient population that apparently was not able to tolerate a commitment to long-term traditional therapy. And so the health centers were not eager at that point to expand their relationship with CBH. But we were interested in the challenge. So from there, we sort of went into a process of negotiation with CBH and an iterative process for creating a system that would work for everybody. The first step was an agreement to adopt a brief therapy model. And basically what that involved was still using traditional therapy methods, but creating more collaboration with primary care, a somewhat reduced burden of paperwork, and an expanded, elongated period of patient engagement that seemed more appropriate for primary care. We determined that in order to shift practice to this more collaborative model, that it would require training of both primary care and behavioral health providers, and some development of practice protocols that were more conducive, more supportive of collaborative care. So we also recognized that to accomplish that required resources. The Health Federation was able to seek and secure a multi-year grant from the Aetna Foundation in order to support that startup activity. This allowed us to make a real investment in figuring out the best way to organize this care. We kicked off the project by inviting to train both primary care and mental health providers. We invited a man named Dr. Kirk Strassel from Washington State to kind of kick off our initiative. He is a psychologist and arguably the father of something called the behavioral health consultation model. Dr. Strassel looked at our brief therapy proposal and said that if we succeeded, we were ensuring our failure. That is, if we succeeded in generating more referrals from primary care to behavioral health, that using traditional therapy models, we would quickly overwhelm our capacity and therefore fail in expanding access to care. So, that was an eye-opening bit of training and discussion and started us on the road to developing a model of true integration that would be more efficient. The behavioral health consultation model, which we have now adopted through a process which I will go into in a moment, is one that has the behavioral health specialist working side by side with the primary care provider, providing services right in the physical exam room. The behavioral health consultant doesn't carry an independent caseload, but rather focuses specifically on the functional status of the patient and the presenting problem, makes recommendations, provides care in a stepwise fashion, documents in the medical record using a soap note format, which is what is commonly used in primary care, so that it's entirely useful to the primary care provider. And the progress of the patient is then tracked through primary care. The behavioral health specialist is called in on successive visits only as necessary. So this mode of practice really represents a transition from specialty mental health care to primary behavioral health care in the primary care setting, and greatly increases the number of consumers, of patients, who have access to behavioral health services, and in that sense is much more of a population-based model. So to make these practice changes required time and training and coordination. We engaged in a long-term relationship with another training consultant named Neftali Serrano, and he's been working with us for the last more or less 2.5 years. And working on developing practice skills and solving problems and ongoing program development and quality improvement. However, that by itself would not have been enough. Without a policy context in which a reimbursement policy context in which this model operates, it would not be sustainable. So the Health Federation continued its engagement with community behavioral health and kept them engaged in each iterative step in the development of this model so that they had an investment in it as well as the providers. And as a result, we were able to negotiate with them. I'm sorry, losing track of this, and it doesn't really matter. The result was that CBH was willing to create a single billing code and a rate of reimbursement for this model. They created credentialing standards specific to this model. They retrained their auditors to understand this model and to be able to read SOAP note documentation, which looks completely different from what they're accustomed to in traditional mental health. And we were able to work with the State Department of Public Welfare, the Medicaid office, to recognize that federally qualified health centers didn't need additional licensure in order to deliver behavioral health services and get paid, and to approve same-day billing for primary care and behavioral health visits. The initiative also attracted a fair amount of attention from local media. We had feature coverage from the local PBS affiliate radio station, prominent coverage by the major local newspaper, the Philadelphia Inquirer, and inquiries from a number of professional associations, as well as interest from local health funders who have actually identified behavioral health integration as a statewide initiative. So, in the course of reaching this point, we learned some critical lessons. First of all, we learned that it's very important to maintain a collaborative culture that engages the providers, the payers, the policymakers, and the coordinating agency, and that in that process, we really respected the wisdom of providers. The model developed incrementally and was based very much on the wisdom and practice experience of providers. Rather than having someone from another place, from another context, come and impose on us a full-blown model, we were able to develop it through an evolutionary process, resulting in the fact that the providers are really own it and have an investment in quality improvement and problem solving and sharing with each other. As I mentioned, so does the payer system. Because they were involved in each step, they also have an investment in making it work and therefore have been willing to create policies to support it. We were also able to create an informal learning community. The Health Federation convenes a monthly cross-site clinical team meeting in which ongoing training and problem-solving and program development takes place. There is an atmosphere of generosity. Informally, the practitioners, the more senior mentor, the less experienced. When they discover a new screening tool, there's an informal communication that happens, and people are learning from each other. The behavioral health directors from each of the participating organizations meet quarterly and identify further needs for program development and the ongoing training agenda. The other thing that we found quite important to the process was the identification and nurturing of champions. Each of the participating organizations really has one or two people in it who are the principal drivers of the process. And we, at the Health Federation level, at the network level, have been able to nurture those champions by providing them with support, ongoing training, opportunities for leadership, and opportunities to be recognized publicly for being leaders and for the change that they're creating. We also feel very good about the fact that we were able, because of this centralized function of managing the partnership, that we were able to work on all of these fronts concurrently, engaging practitioners and policymakers and so forth, because all of their component parts were necessary to make this puzzle whole. And that would not happen without someone making it their job to make all of that happen, because obviously the practitioners, engaged as they are involved on a daily basis in the care of their patients. And in order to have that kind of sustained and persistent progress requires dedicated time and attention. And the last point being time and attention, patience, persistence. I mentioned that it's taken us 5 years to get to this point. We're not done. We're fully established in our sites in adult care. We have yet to move down into pediatric care. There are a number of other policy issues that we want to tackle, such as reimbursement for psychiatric consultation to primary care around medication issues without actually having face-to-face contact with patients. And so it will continue to take time, and it will continue to take to require coordination. So in conclusion, we believe that this is a model that makes sense. It's a model that expands service capacity, increases access. It is effective for both primary care and behavioral health. The satisfaction of providers from both disciplines has been very high. And they feel mutually supported. The primary care providers feel supported, the behavioral health providers feel valued. This isn't a population-based model of care, and I believe it is the face of the future in delivery of care. It's consistent with healthcare reform principles of the family-centered medical home model. And it does represent an accessible and cost-effective system of delivery. So that's is really my story. We've managed to mobilize this shared vision and shared momentum and shared leadership, which I think has been the key to making it all come together. Thank you.